Welcome to the Support and Kindness Podcast with Greg and Rich, where real stories meet with real compassion. I'm Greg Shaw, and each week Rich and I will explore the journeys, challenges and triumphs that connect us all. Whether you're here for hope, healing, or a gentle reminder that you're not alone, you found your place. Hi, I'm Greg Shaw, and this is the Support and Kindness Podcast. You're listening to episode 14, Understanding Chronic Pain Beyond the Hurt. Today, we're talking about chronic pain, what it is, why it's often invisible, how it shapes everyday life, and some practical ways to cope and adapt over time. Joining me today are my co-hosts, Rich, Jay, Derek, and Sam. And just a quick note before we start, we're not medical professionals. We're sharing personal stories and experiences of living with chronic pain. Nothing that you hear today should be taken as medical advice. To put it simply, chronic pain is pain that sticks around long after an injury should have healed, usually 3 to 6 months or more. And it's different from acute pain, which is your body's early warning system that something's wrong. When pain lasts a long time, the nervous system can stay overly sensitive even after the injury heals, and as a result, small or normal sensations can feel quite painful. Chronic pain doesn't stay isolated. It affects many parts of your life and causes various physical problems. Your immune system can weaken. Pain and stress can affect your heart and circulation. Digestion can be affected too. Changes in appetite, activity, or medication can make you lose or gain weight. Pain and anxiety can make your breathing feel shallow or tight. Everyday movements such as walking, standing, cleaning, cooking, or showering can become hard. And on bad days, basic hygiene like brushing your teeth or showering might feel quite impossible. You might need to change or stop hobbies or activities like sports, crafts, music, or exercises. In short, it can touch nearly every part of your life, but it doesn't just affect your body. It changes how your mind works too. It can mess with your thinking and memory. Decision-making can feel like climbing a mountain. Motivation can shift and you might genuinely not want to do things. And you might feel tired and drained and overwhelmed all the time before you actually start. Chronic pain also touches your emotions and your relationships. Anxiety and stress are quite common and it can affect how you see yourself. Some people turn to alcohol or drugs to cope with pain or with the stress around it. That's completely understandable, but it can lead to other problems over time. Social life and relationships can often change. You might cancel plans at the last minute, miss important events, or feel left out when others keep going without you. Family roles can shift too, and intimacy can be affected. And then there's work and money. Missed days, reduced hours, or even losing a job. So chronic pain isn't just a physical experience that can reach almost every aspect and part of your life. If you're facing that, it's understandable that you'll be exhausted. It's reasonable that it seems overwhelming because it truly is. One of the hardest things about chronic pain is that from the outside, it's often invisible. People around you might say, "You don't look sick. You were fine yesterday." Probably just stress. But your scans and blood tests can all show normal, even when you're in real intense pain. Pain's complicated. It can involve both the body and brain. Medical tests don't pick up on everything that's going on. If you live with chronic pain, even when the tests show nothing, your pain is still real. Your experience is still valid and it matters. Not seeing anything on a scan, it doesn't mean that you're imagining it or that you're making it up. In this episode, we want to explain how chronic pain starts, how it can change over time, and how it affects your body, your mood, and everyday life. Talk honestly about the emotional and the social side of things. Share practical strategies that many people might find helpful, including things such as pacing and managing energy, gentle or graded movement, routines to support sleep or lower stress, simple mental health tools, tracking symptoms and activities in a way that helps, and communication tips for talking with family, friends, and healthcare providers. And finally, we'll wrap up with a concrete list of next steps that you can try right away and some trusted resources that you can explore after the episode, and they'll be in the show notes. Before we jump in, just a couple of ground rules. We're going to keep the conversation flowing, and you'll hear from each of us as we share our personal experiences, practical tips that have helped us. As you listen, notice any concrete ideas that you might want to try or adapt in your own situation. And just a reminder, this is for education only. It's not medical advice. Always talk with your healthcare provider before starting, stopping, or changing any treatment or medication regimes. All right, so we'll bring everyone in. Rich, Jay, Derek, Sam, welcome. To get started, I'd like to ask each of you three things: how your pain first began, an emotional or social challenge it's created for you, and a practical coping strategy that helps you get through the day. Aim for about 3 minutes if you can, and really just speak from your heart. Rich, would you like to kick us off?
Thanks, Greg. I'd love to kick us off. My pain began in my late teens. I was involved in multiple motor vehicle accidents in a short period of time after having had a slew of sports concussions growing up. These two major car accidents in a few days left me with headaches and migraines and TBIs that I've been dealing with ever since. The emotional and social challenges of headaches and migraines can be tough. They've left me with what I did a lot more in the past than what I'm doing now, as I've learned coping skills over the last 20, 30 years. But they impact where I go, what I'm willing to do, or the situation I'm willing to put myself in. I stayed back from a lot of opportunities. I didn't go because my headache was progressing. I didn't take risk going out to a sporting event or a concert or something like that because I didn't want to risk being in a noisy environment because of how my headache was feeling that day or how the lights would affect my headache or turn a headache into a migraine. I missed out on a lot of memories with a lot of quality people, so I could sit back with a washcloth on my forehead. And socially, that takes a toll. Missing holidays, leaving early to lie down, high energy events can trigger more severe symptoms, and I missed a lot of really fun times. One practical strategy that helps me get through day to day is I've benefited from a few medication advancements over the last 30 years. I've seen the advancements that they've made in treatment. I've seen what some of my fellow patients in the traumatic brain injury group are going through in their treatment. So I get to see a lot of what was the, I guess, cutting edge therapies for head injuries and headaches and migraines and that sort of ailment. So it's been nice. Practical strategy that helps get me through the day. Stay positive, keep looking toward the next medication or type of treatment as being the one that's going to solve my migraine problem.
Thank you for your honest chair, Rich. I really appreciate that. Jay, would you like to go next?
I would like to go next. It's good to see everybody. Got a full house again today, and that makes me happy. It means we're making it farther and reaching more people. My chronic pain is, well, I was in a car accident, but that's not the one I'm going to speak on. I'm going to talk about, I have stomach illnesses. I have cyclical vomiting syndrome, along with cannabinoid hyperemesis, and it continually put me in the hospital. I have episodes rather than everyday pain. I mean, I always have some discomfort, but I wouldn't call it chronic pain every single day. But when I do have these episodes, it almost always leads to an emergency room visit, and then 9 times out of 10, being admitted to the hospital. And the social toll that this has taken is cannabinoid hyperemesis. It's a sickness that you get from smoking marijuana. It's like being allergic to marijuana. And I still continue to do it, even though that's very stupid to do something that you're allergic to. But it would put me in the hospital, and the social tolls it would take on me and my family. My family had to see me continually destroy myself, get the sickest you can imagine, just nonstop vomiting, lose weight. And then this happens every 2 or 3 months. So people saw me struggle and saw me constantly being in the hospital for something that I can prevent. I can't prevent the cyclical vomiting syndrome, but I certainly can prevent the cannabinoid hyperemesis. And I'm happy to say that I have not done that in almost 4 months. And that has been one of the few things that really has provided relief from it. That's the only thing you can do. They don't have any treatment for cannabinoid hyperemesis as of now, except for nausea medications, things like that. And not to mention the valuable resources I'm wasting by going into the hospital on something that I can absolutely prevent. And then how I make it through the day, when I use hydrotherapy a lot. Warm water baths is directly related to the stomach illnesses I have. I don't know if it's the weightlessness from water, but it's just, it's the only thing that makes me feel better when I'm in these stomach episodes. And how I make it through the day is I do a lot of breathing exercises. I meditate. especially in the really bad times. And being in the hospital, unfortunately, is a way that I have to cope sometimes. And again, happy to be here.
Thanks, Jay. Thanks for your honesty. Derek, would you like to go next?
Certainly. Thank you, Greg. Well, when did my pain first begin? Well, I will say 12-ish years ago, but I don't know when I was drunk 12 years ago and I fell down a flight of stairs. I can't really recall the first month because I was off and on, and whether it was medically induced or not, a coma, and I just can't recall any memories from the first month because it was a traumatic brain injury. But after the fact, I've noticed it was more severe then, but it's dulled over the years. But it's not necessarily pain. It's a numbness that there's a side effect of pain because I can't feel how I walk with my certain stance. So I fell on my right hip as I was barreling down the flight of stairs, and there's been nerve damage. So the way that I walk, it's disproportionate, and there isn't an equilibrium, not necessarily vertigo, but a problem with how I walk, and then musculature, how it compensates. It leaves a tick in my back. So just because my gait isn't proper, my lower back, there's a dull pain, and sometimes it's more severe and other times it's not. But I just found it disheartening after a while because I wouldn't be able to partake in certain social, like partaking in games. I wasn't quite up to snuff for the most part. I just would kind of shy away. But for the most part, it was fine. And then how I've been trying to combat that, pretty much after the first 6 months after my TBI were interesting. But physically, I've done an amalgam of different stretches that I've learned in vinyasa yoga, as well as when I ran cross country in high school and middle school. I just combine the different types of stretching to kind of hit all the snags in my musculature and how I walk and how I feel and how I move. So for the most part, that physical pain is fine. Or the emotion, if anything, there was more emotional pain. And aside from just with my shortcomings with my physical abilities and another little tick with my TBI, I would just get emotionally volatile and frantic when things, I was very ambivalent. Everything was either extremely yay or extremely nay. And I've learned to just simmer down from that for the most part. There's a myriad of different ways that, whether it's big or small, I've found a myriad of ways that I can deal with it by just taking a step back and sitting and breathing a few times. Or I'll just walk around if I need to get my gait back in action. Or I'll just stretch more and longer. Or sometimes my body just needs a break. I just listen to my body, listen to my heart, listen to my gut, and try not to second guess my gut. I will never second guess my gut because it usually bites me in the butt. I'm rambling, and those are my 3 minutes, but thank you.
Not at all. Thank you for such an honest chat, Derek. I appreciate that. Sam, would you like to go?
Oh, okay, pokey. Let's give it a go. So, let's see. My 3 minutes. So, yeah, my pain starts, many years ago, probably my early 20s. I'm 46 now, so almost 2 decades ago. I broke my back first. I had a rough cave-in, and I went down. I was working. But that started, and I dealt with that for quite a while, and then I ended up with avascular necrosis. My long bone joints don't get blood, so they can't regenerate, so they die and crush in on themselves. I've had several joint replacements, going through like four or five different hip replacements, two here in the last 6-7 years ago, I guess. Got infected. And yeah, so I've been dealing with that, which that was fun, especially back in the day where, you know, they were pushing pills, which of course led to me getting addicted to opiate. And yeah, so that, I mean, just with the chronic pain and everything, the last 12 years, I've been in recovery and learning to live with chronic pain without any pain medication. So it's been a road, you know. So I've been dealing with that, and I'm doing a hell of a lot better than I was when I was on pain medication. So that's actually a good thing. Yeah, the social changes that it created. At first, I just pushed everybody away. Like, it, for one, it was all I talked about. And after a while, people get tired of hearing that. You're always miserable. And so you just push everybody away. I just like self-destructed and fell more into addiction. So eventually ended up on the streets, on heroin and everything else. But yeah, social change. And one practical strategy. I'm still looking for the most practical. I'm just now learning that my brain is probably not like a normal brain. And, so I'm kind of learning about my brain. And so, yeah, I know that like breathing is really good. Meditation, that's a good one. So, yeah, I'm a bit late to the whole understanding that my brain is not the typical, I guess. Which, okay, it's been interesting. So, yeah, let me see. So, yeah, that's really what I got right now. And yeah, is that 3 minutes? Is that three things? I don't
Thank you
know.
for such an honest share. I suppose I should take my turn as well, and I didn't practice for my turn, so I'll just go just a real quick round. My pain began many years ago, but it's so much worse than it used to be. I have a history of lifting things wrong, and I used to have a reputation working in factories and things. If you couldn't lift something up or move something or undo something, they would say, "Go get Greg and he'll do it." And I kind of lapped up to that part. I kind of played that part up and hurt myself many times. The old adage, put your back into it, no pain, no gain, and maladapted coping, not coping strategies, but maladapted saying such as that, not bending at the knees. I hurt my back a few times at work. I never thought of claiming workman's comp or anything like that. And then being a person of size, you're prone to injury a little bit more as well, because I think the muscles are working overtime. And it's really affected me. I cancel plans, I don't go anywhere. It really fed into the depression. And as I started canceling plans and going places less, weight gained with medication changes, a lot of medications that you take for pain, if you're unfortunate enough to have to take medications. Or maybe I should say fortunate enough, because it's a good thing that we do have medications that can treat pain. Either way, they can interfere with your metabolism and cause weight gain, which can then reduce activity, and it becomes a vicious cycle. Where do you get out of it? So I cancel plans, I isolate and things like that. What gets me through the day? Distraction, where I can find it. If I can, I do something called creative work hour. I'm part of a co-working creative group, and I do that every day. We meet briefly, we say what we're going to work on, and then we go off and we come back an hour later, say how we did. And it's become a community and a second family to me. So that's a huge distraction. Watching a movie or a film, and you can do that. Not always easy to do with depression. And gratitude, practicing gratitude is very helpful. And trying to help other people, trying to be of service. In the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and any of those 12-step programs, they believe in service work for a reason. It's very good for you. So that's kind of how I get through my day. So, yeah, thank you everyone for sharing so openly and honestly. Now that we've covered your pain, how it started, and some of the emotional challenges, and a few strategies that have helped you get through the day, before we wrap up, I want to give you each a chance to share anything that's on your heart right now. No structure, no rules, no specific questions. It could be a message to somebody who's in pain that might be listening, something that you wish people understood about you, a moment of gratitude, a frustration, or just where you're at today, just whatever's on your heart. So Rich, would you like to go first?
Something that Sam said that really stuck out to me is that people don't want to hear about it. After you, the people you live with, the people you're around all the time, you can only say, my back hurts, my legs hurt, my joints hurt, whatever your ailment is, whatever your chronic pain is, my emotions, my headaches, my whatever your ailment is. You can only say it so many times before your loved ones tune you out. And it's so sad to be tuned out, to have your chronic pain tuned out. It's very isolating. It's very lonely. It's a real terrible feeling. Just something that Sam had said that stood out to me that I wanted to bring back up.
Thanks, Rich. I appreciate that. It reminds me of the episode that we did on medical gaslighting, where medical professionals don't listen to you as well. It's very frustrating. Jay, what's on your heart today?
Well, I would also like to touch on that. The last time I was in the hospital, because again, my episodes can be preventable, the terrible ones. And I had a doctor actually, when I was in the emergency room, tell me, because I'd been there so many times for the same exact thing, he says, if you come back, all I'm going to do is scan you to make sure that there's nothing physically wrong with you that I can't fix. And then I'm going to send you on your way. And don't come back. And I actually had a hospital tell me, don't come back for this illness. I mean, I'm sure if I was in a car accident or something like that, they would have to treat me. But for this illness, they said, don't come back. We're not going to help you. They even brought a security guard to escort me out. So you can wear out your welcome with medical professionals. And that also brings me to my family. My family, you know, they can only, no one wants to see someone they love in pain. So they can only handle so much. I had a ex-fiance and she came to the hospital with me one time. And I think smoking had a lot to do with the reason why we broke up. I was hard-headed, didn't want to give it up. It was part of my identity. And the other thing I wanted to touch on is I didn't actually say how my pain started. My pain started when I was 18. Before I was 18, I had an iron stomach. I used to drink beers, you know, eat chicken wings with my friends and just had an iron stomach. No problems at all. And then when I was 18, I had my first episode and I thought that I was just sick with the flu or something like that. But then it persisted for days and days and days to the point where I had to go to the emergency room. And from that point on, I was misdiagnosed over and over. They pulled my gallbladder, even though there was nothing wrong with it. Well, they didn't know that until they pulled it out. But it was a healthy gallbladder after they pulled it out. They tried every test they could think of. The only solution they could think of was cyclical vomiting syndrome. And it actually took me I hadn't done marijuana in about 10 years and I picked it up again and started getting sick again. So that's how I finally figured out what it was. In my teen years, when it started, 18 to 21, I went from 280 to 130 pounds in less than 8 months, I think. So stomach pain is really, really hard. Nausea, I probably puke 3 or 4 times a week still. So I've been conditioned to it. Rich and I have talked about that it almost becomes a process. You have it down to a science when you vomit, that it's almost like a purge and you become used to it. And that's not a healthy way to live. It tears up your stomach lining. It has all kinds of effects on your body. It's no way to live. And I hope if there's people out there with chronic pain that this discussion can help you. You're not alone. There's resources out there. I also didn't mention before, one of the ways I cope is these groups. Since I've been doing these groups with these fellas and the podcasts, I really have found that my emotional pain has gotten a lot better. I feel included, loved when I hang out with these guys, and support groups are out there. They help a lot. And yeah, I think that's all I have.
Thanks, Jane. I appreciate your honesty. Derek, what's on your heart today?
I would just say that regardless of your physical circumstances and the extent of whatever pain you experience, whether it's deemed minimal by yourself or exorbitantly huge by others, just try to take it slow day by day. Be grateful for what you have. Be grateful for what you've been given. And sometimes, even in my worst moods and the worst pain I've ever felt or feel, sometimes I get solace from just the ability to experience pain, considering how close I was to dying. The fact that I still have the neurological capacity to feel pain comforts me when I'm feeling my worst. Like, hey, at least you're able to feel this. At least you're not dead from my brain injury. So there's that.
Sam, what's on your heart today?
Okay. Oh, you know, lots of stuff, I guess. There's always living with chronic pain. My body's like always in mutiny. It's mutinous and can never plan or anything. So one thing, like a lot of people, I guess, that you're just lazy or you just don't want to do nothing, or you can't push through it. That's definitely one that I've run across. And I even thought about that about myself for many years. You know, it's really hard to comprehend, I guess, if you haven't been through it. But yeah, it's, you can't get through it. You know, it's not really get through it. You learn to live with it and you learn different coping strategies. I am on Suboxone, which helps with pain. It's helped to take the edge off, I guess. Because the thing about me and like my brain, there's never enough pain medication for me. They can't produce enough to keep me freaking from, you know, feeling like crap when I take it and helping my pain. It's just not, there's no such thing, you know, like, so that's not an option for me. Yeah, it's definitely, I think that it's finally starting to be more taken seriously with like Suboxone and pain. The only thing though is like with Suboxone surgeries, because it blocks opiates. I mean, I've been through 2 surgeries while on Suboxone, and I did better as soon as I got off the Suboxone, like as soon as I got on the Suboxone, I mean. But yeah, it's interesting to see how the misconceptions, like I even had total misconceptions. I'm still learning about what chronic pain works and my brain. I'm learning more and more about my own brain, and my brain, it can suck at times, but yeah. I don't know. That's about what. For some reason, I just kind of like went blank for a minute, right? Like right before. But go ahead.
Not a problem. Thank you, Sam. I appreciate that. I echo what everybody said, and I'd like to thank you all for your honesty and your vulnerability here. To anyone listening who lives with chronic pain, you're not alone, and your experience matters. And it's okay to take one step at a time. These groups have helped me tremendously, the podcast and everything else. So thanks again to Rich, Jay, Derek and Sam. Honest and helpful conversation. Before we wrap up, I want to pull together the main takeaway points and some trusted resources. All of the links that I mention will be in the show notes, so they'll have clickable links. You don't need to write anything down. First, the essentials. Simple definition. Chronic pain is pain that lasts longer than normal healing time, usually months or more, and it can continue long after the original illness has healed. Second, the invisible burden. Chronic pain is unseen and misunderstood. People will say things like, you don't look sick. That's why support, validation, and patience from others really matter, as you've heard from the co-host. Third, there's no single cure for most chronic pain, and most people end up using a mixture of strategies over time. And that might include medical treatments when needed, pacing, gradual movement, good sleep and stress habits, simple symptom tracking, mental health tools like CBT, mindfulness, acceptance-based approaches, and peer and community support. And none of these are magic fixes. But small daily habits can add up. Fourth would be self-advocacy. It helps to keep a simple pain and activity log, and it comes in handy to have with you when you go to appointments to take notes and questions. And have at least one person on your side who listens and believes you and has your back. Here are some national and international resources. All will be in the show notes. Clickable links. In the United States is the U.S. Pain Foundation. There's the American Chronic Pain Association, National Pain Advocacy Center, Chronic Pain Research Alliance, International Association for the Study of Pain, Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, American Society for Pain Management, Nursing, and in Canada and regional, there's the Canadian Pain Society and Pain BC, which has patient resources and programs for British Columbia, but many tools are useful elsewhere. And a few condition-specific tools and resources is the Arthritis Foundation, the American Migraine Foundation, National Fibromyalgia and Chronic Pain Association, and the Foundation for Peripheral Neuropathy. And then there's some apps and digital tools. You can search your device's app store for things like pain tracking. And then there's mindfulness and sleep apps that can help. And these names will be in the show notes. And other useful links that we'll put in there for you. We'll put a directory of organizations for people with pain and the ISAP Global Gear Initiatives. To find a pain clinic near you, search online for a clinic plus your city. Check websites of major hospital and university medical systems in your area. All of these websites and names, again, will be in the show notes with clickable links. Quick practical steps you can take this week. A few things that you could try if you have the capacity. Start a one-page pain activity log. And each day, write down the date, your pain level, your main activities, how you slept, and a small change that you could try next time. Pick a 5-minute grounding routine for pain flare days. Set one small repeatable movement goal for the week. and choose one supportive person. Agree on a simple signal or short script that you can use if you need to cancel plans, so you don't have to explain everything every time to everyone. And if you live with chronic pain, your experience is real. You don't have to do this alone. Needing rest doesn't mean that you are weak. Small, consistent steps and habits wins the race. Before I close, I do want to mention that we host several free online support groups each week. If you'd like a safe, supportive space to talk to others who really understand, we have groups running on Mondays, Tuesdays and Wednesdays, and you can find the details in the show notes with a calendar link. And if today's episode has helped you, you can support the show by subscribing to the Support and Kindness podcast. Leave us a rating or a review on your podcast platform. It truly helps other people to find the show. And share this episode with a friend or a family member or maybe a clinician who might benefit. Send feedback, resources, or your story to info@kindnessrx.org. And let us know what worked for you and what you'd like us to cover next. Thank you for listening to the Support and Kindness podcast. Join us next time for another inspiring conversation. And until then, take care. Thanks for listening to the Support and Kindness podcast. If this episode helped you, please share it with someone that might need it. You can connect with us and you can find more resources at kindnessrx.org. Take care. And let's keep building a kinder world together.